Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. This week we're joined by Gadget Show legend, John Bentley, who's helping us answer a big question. Have flagship smartphones become too expensive?
That is a really good question. Because these days phones costing £500 or £600 come with, frankly, incredible cameras, stunning displays and more power than most of us will ever need.
So we're going to turn this chat into the World Cup of smartphones. You see what we've done there? We've each picked a head-to-head battle between an affordable challenger and a premium heavyweight. And by the end, we'll be crowning our phone of the year for 2026. So before we get started, a quick word from our friends at CEX.
Yeah, if you're the sort of person who can lose half an hour looking at gadgets that you never even knew that you wanted, then CEX is a dangerous place.
Yeah, whether you're into smartphones, gaming, cameras, laptops, smart home tech or retro consoles, there's always something interesting on the shelves.
And because CEX buys and sells pre-owned technology, you can often find premium tech for a lot less than buying it brand new.
Everything is tested before it goes on sale, so you know that it's working as it should.
And every item comes with a 5-year warranty, which is longer than many manufacturers offer on brand new products.
Of course, all that tech has to come from somewhere.
Exactly. If you've got an old phone, a laptop, a console, an old smartphone or a tablet gathering dust at home, CEX might buy it from you for cash or give you even more in in-store credit.
Which means your old gadgets could help pay for your next upgrade.
It's a win-win, a little bit like what we're hoping for England at the World Cup. You clear some space, someone else gets a great deal, and that mystery box of old chargers finally gets the love and attention it deserves.
So visit webuy.com or your local CEX store and see what's waiting for you. Right, before we get into this week's tech news, a little favour. If you're enjoying the podcast and you haven't already done so, can you hit follow wherever you're listening right now?
Yeah, it's the easiest way to make sure you never miss an episode. No searching, no scrolling, or no suddenly realising that you've got 3 weeks of the Gadget Show podcast to catch up on.
And if you've been listening for a while, we do thank you. We know there's lots of podcasts competing for your ears these days.
Anyway, enough housekeeping. John, great to see you.
Lovely to be here.
Before you tell us what you've been up to, I wanted to share a lovely comment that was sent via our YouTube channel. It's from Elusive Bounce. John Bentley is the geek version of David Attenborough.
Oh, gosh.
I totally agree.
My 100th birthday this year.
Well, there you go. What an absolute tech legend. He really is, having followed you guys since the Gadget Show first started. And you're all every bit as special all these years later. We much appreciate that. Long may you all continue. And thanks for all these amazing years. There we go. Absolutely brilliant. So what's been keeping you busy, John?
Oh, well, various things. I'm in a bit of a sad mood this month because I think it's the end of an era. The old long-wave Radio 4 transmissions from Droitwich are shutting down later this month. And I just think it's sort of the end for actually rather nice old technology, long-wave radio, in the sense that we can go over vast distances. I can remember those trips to France on holiday. How long will the car radio keep us tuned in to hear the news and all that sort of thing? It's just the fact that you could have one transmitter covering virtually the entire country and beyond. You could even pick it up in North Africa, and actually occasionally you can go as far as Florida or something.
Morocco.
Apparently something to do with the ionosphere and the way it responded to the rain. Anyway, I think it's 27th, and I should be shedding a quiet tear that I can no longer listen to the BBC on 1500 meters or 1458 long wave.
I too have fond memories of long wave, actually, in my radio amateur days, John, when the ionosphere would come into play at around sort of 7 o'clock
when
at night.
When it started to get dark,
And it would just extend that range, and I used to get Russian radio, and I'm guessing, I love the idea of you and the family just desperately holding on to a signal. It would have gone in and out, wouldn't it, as you passed?
Yes, it would. I mean, I remember the picture holiday about 2011. I think we're in the Pyrenees, and there was no data on the mobile. There was no Wi-Fi in our holiday home, and the only way we could keep in touch was actually going out into the car outside, listed on the Peugeot rental car. I think it had long wave, and it was loud and clear. You could hear all the news and everything, which. No more.
Oh,
I love that.
That actually is a sad day, John.
although you will still be able to hear the bongs of Big Ben in Parliament Square over the radio quicker than you hear them from the actual coming over the sound waves, because FM apparently is just as quick. So Radio 4 FM from Crystal Palace will still give you those bongs.
I mean, you are actually becoming more and more like David Attenborough with the arms and everything going there. I don't know if it's David Attenborough or Magnus Pike.
Sorry.
Okay, well, it's great to have you along, John, and it won't have failed to escape your notice that one of the biggest technology stories of the week is the government's decision, of course, to ban under 16s from using major social media platforms in the UK. This has created an enormous amount of noise. The proposed restrictions would cover some of the biggest names on the internet, including TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, X, and even YouTube, which I know some kids get their homework on. Meanwhile, messaging services such as WhatsApp and Signal are expected to remain exempt from the ban. The government's also proposing additional restrictions on things like live streaming and contact from strangers on gaming platforms. So on the face of it, the reasoning is very easy to understand. Ministers argue that social media companies have had years to make their platform safer for children, and they simply haven't done enough. Concerns around mental health, cyberbullying, addictive algorithms, harmful content and sleep disruption have all helped to drive this decision. But while the announcement itself is straightforward, the reality seems anything but that. The first question is, how is this actually going to work? Most social media platforms already have minimum age requirements, yet millions of younger users have found their way onto them, of course, because they're kids. Australia's experience has shown that introducing a ban is one thing and enforcing it is something completely different. Many children reportedly continued using social media after restrictions were introduced, often by simply finding ways around the age checks. It sort of reminds me a little bit of smoking when we were kids, because you could always, you know, find yourself to go and buy a cigarette if you wanted to. That means age verification is likely to become a huge part of this conversation. But then, of course, you run into another challenge. Who would be responsible for checking people's ages? Should Apple and Google be stopping younger users from downloading apps in the first place? Or should the responsibility sit with TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, and the other platforms themselves? And how much personal information should people have to hand over just to prove their age? Now, of course, social media isn't entirely negative. Most of us have heard stories about young people being harmed online, but we've also had plenty of examples of teenagers finding communities, support networks and friendships through platforms like YouTube, Instagram and TikTok. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, some kids get their homework online. If you block access to the biggest, most regulated platforms, do young people simply move elsewhere? Do they end up on smaller, less regulated services with fewer safeguards and less oversight? So while there seems to be a broad agreement that children do need greater protection online, I think that's without question. There's much less agreement on whether a ban is actually the answer. Now, I'm really interested to hear what everybody thinks on this, because it feels like one of those stories where the goal is really easy to understand. Clearly something needs to be done and something needs to change. But the practical reality is much more complicated. Now, John, you've got girls. They're grown up now. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, well, I mean, it seems to be a disproportionate response to the problem, I think, in the sense that you're throwing away an awful lot of good. People do. I mean, certainly when I was growing up, I was interested at the age of 13, 14. I was interested in lots of things that might be perceived as adult, not in any sort of unpleasant way, but, you know, just I was mending televisions and repairing them. I was building electronic things and all that. So and a community of people I could talk to, particularly as we're living in a rural area, absolutely vital. It just seems it would have made my life much better to be able to speak to everybody back there. We're just throwing away all the good things that people can get from interaction over the internet in a semi-regulated way. But I mean, I do see also that there's lots wrong. I mean, the algorithms are a sort of vicious things. They seem to send you endlessly down down tunnels. Even as an adult, you don't particularly want to be 100% sent down. So I and certainly, but I think it's those sort of things that need to be attacked directly, and some better way of working needs to be established, rather than just say, oh, we've got to ban it all, it's terrible, everybody should go back to being bored. And
well, do you think though that there's an argument to say that this ban brings the conversation to the forefront, which I suppose it does do, and can start to create a shift in social media and enforce the tech companies to create more safeguarding?
Yeah, but I don't think that's not the approach they've taken, is it, Susie? And by the way, I think your summary was excellent. It was very balanced, and I'm really pleased to hear that, because it's easy to get behind what seems like a really wholesome message, isn't it, that our children are losing their childhood. And
nobody wants that. Nobody wants one child to be bullied, one united. Child to be harmed.
Yeah, we're united behind the negative aspects of what has happened to our children's childhoods, right? We understand that there is I believe there is an impact. It's how you respond to that, and that's, I think, what John is referring to. An outright ban does feel like a very sort of, and again, you know, without getting too political, but Labour have attempted to usher in ID checks. They're very keen on facial recognition. These are all very problematic technologies, and the reason they're problematic is that the sort of power that it gives them, they've already demonstrated that they use in terms of profiling people for their social media use, imprisoning people for tweets and all that sort of stuff. It doesn't matter where you sit on the political divide around that, it is, I think, fair to say it's problematic, that's monitoring of a population. And the reality is that surely it's not an exaggeration to describe the internet, you know, established in the 90s, as possibly the greatest experiment in the freedom of speech ever conducted in humanity's history. I mean, it's extraordinary. And the access it gives us to knowledge and ideas, which is what the governments find challenging, is incredibly positive. And what it means essentially is that from spring 2027, that experiment in the UK is over. And not uniquely in the UK, but almost uniquely. And they're not just describing it as an Australian version. They actually, one of the ministers said, if I'm not incorrect, in Parliament a couple of days ago, they're calling it Australia plus plus. So they're all in on this. So it is concerning.
It seems to be almost all the political parties seem to be on it. Actually, all politicians. So it's more than just the Labour Party, I think. I'm just concerned that anybody under 16 doesn't seem to wouldn't have access to all the interesting things going on in the world, which they need to have, because
absolutely,
they've got opinions on everything.
Absolutely, well
from
said.
A much earlier age, and the capable of adult thought was everybody's being forced into. There seems to be no gradation almost. I mean, whether you're 5 or whether you're 15, you're still sort of somehow. The world is censored, which I find unacceptable, really.
Did you see the BBC interview where they interviewed kids in a school? And they interviewed this girl who was really articulate. She was a cool kid. And at the very end, the final question was, so what are you going to do now that you can't access social media? She went, stare at a wall. I couldn't believe it. It was so funny. Anyway, can I tell you what caught my attention this week? Is that all right? So something that we've been talking about, guys, on the Gadget Show podcast for months or maybe even years, you'll be pleased to hear, Susie, it's augmented reality glasses.
Great.
The Snapchat people think they finally cracked it. They've just unveiled a brand new pair of augmented reality glasses called Specs. And on paper, at least, they're seriously impressive. I've not seen them, so bear with us. All right, we only got the old press release, but here we go. They're completely standalone, so no wires, no tether, no battery pack hanging off your belt. They've squeezed twin processors, AI, wouldn't you know it, hand tracking, all right, spatial computing, really, like the Vision Pro, and a full-colour augmented reality display into a pair of glasses that weigh little more than a chunky pair of sunglasses. Snap say the experience is like carrying around a 24-inch monitor for work or a 115-inch cinema screen for movies, all floating in front of your eyes. So the kids no longer are going to be distracted on the way to school looking at their phones because they're on X or whatever they do on TikTok. They're going to walk into a car, because they've got 115-inch cinema screen in front of them, allegedly. They can overlay directions onto the real world, provide AI assistance based on what you're looking at, and run immersive augmented reality apps built by developers. I'm still not convinced, guys, by this AI describe what's in front of me thing. It doesn't feel really compelling, even having tried it a few weeks ago in an optician's, which Susie and I talked about. Anyway, the big question isn't whether the technology works anymore. It probably does. The question is whether normal people actually want to wear computers on their faces. And I know one who's got a very fine pair of glasses on her face right now who probably is not a candidate. As we've discussed in detail before, there is one massive question hanging over this, and it's not about battery life or screen resolution. It's privacy. How interesting. A second story of the day, or third, or whatever it is, and we're on to the privacy thing again. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, because everybody wants all our data. It's just a massive grab of our data. They all want to own us. That's what we're up against, isn't it?
I know you're a big fan, Susie. I can just see it.
Well, do you know when we did the article on Meta glasses last time, when a couple of weeks ago, it got a really big response. And there's a lot of pushback from the public on privacy. I know I'm becoming the poster girl for this. It's a hill I'm happy to die on, to be honest. But I was quite pleasantly surprised at the support.
Can I film you? Can I stream you on the hill?
What with the glasses?
You've died on your hill.
Even when I'm dying on my hill, you're filming me.
Jackson, do you not get me up any of this?
Invasion ever. I'm dying. Just let me die without filming me and putting me on social media. What's wrong with you?
But you're right, though. But that is also a thing, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Inappropriate moments to capture content. Yeah. Yes, I agree. Because this generation have been weaned on such open access. And now I'm sounding like a Labour politician. Where is the line? It's fascinating. Well, anyway, Snap say they've got privacy built in from day one. there's a recording indicator light, so hey, everything's fine. Lots of on-device processing.
See them.
And users remain in control of what gets stored and shared. Okay, so take that as you will. But if augmented reality is the next big computing platform after smartphones, and sincerely, I hope that it is, because I'm here for it, these might be one of the clearest signs yet that the future we've been predicting for many years is problematic, but starting now to arrive. It's kind of imminent. Okay, quickly, let's talk about every gadget lover's dream. One of our Patreon supporters is going to get £5,000 worth of tech shopping spree at CEX.
And if you're wondering what £5,000 worth of tech actually looks like, here's some footage of our previous winner, Richard Wykes, spending his haul.
Richard. I didn't know we were going to see this. Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. And I have to say, Richard immediately earned some serious brownie points because the very first thing he bought wasn't for himself.
Oh, it was a brand new TV for his mum.
Thank you, Gadget Show.
The amazing thing is just how much £5,000 can buy.
Yeah, you could walk away with a gaming PC, a PlayStation 5 Pro, an Xbox Series X, a Nintendo Switch 2, and still have money left over for a stack of games.
Or a OLED TV, a premium soundbar, a 4K Blu-ray player, and enough movies and box sets to keep you busy for months.
You could pick up a DSLR camera, a couple of lenses, a drone, and all the accessories you'll need to start creating content straight away.
Or fill your bag with Apple gear, a MacBook Pro, an iPhone, an iPad, an Apple Watch, and a pair of AirPods.
If retro gaming is more your thing, a Dreamcast, a GameCube, a Nintendo 64, a PlayStation 2, oh, the very thought of it, and a collection of classic games you've always wanted to own.
Or a flagship smartphone, a premium laptop, a smartwatch, noise-cancelling headphones, and a tablet.
You get it. Whatever your tech obsession, £5,000 goes a very long way.
And not only that, our friends at T3 are also throwing in a year's subscription to the magazine.
Plus, when you join us on Patreon, you'll get ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, bonus content, and access to a brilliant community of fellow gadget lovers. And that's real. That community is real. The love is real.
And if you're on our max tier, you'll also unlock the entire Gadget Show archive.
That's nearly 20 years of gadget reviews, tests, challenges, road trips, and some truly questionable outfits.
Yeah, mainly yours.
almost exclusively mine.
So if you'd like to be in with a chance of landing a 5,000 tech shopping spree at CEX, head over to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to sign up.
You'll find all the details and full terms and conditions in the episode description.
Right, it's fair to say that buying a smartphone has become a lot more complicated than it used to be. Not that long ago, the rule was really simple. If you wanted the best phone, you bought the most expensive phone you could afford. The flagship models got the best cameras, the best screens, the best performance, and of course, all the latest features. But something interesting has happened over the last few years. The phones sitting in that £500 to £700 bracket have become really good. They've got flagship level processors, brilliant cameras, huge batteries, and displays that would seem impossible at this price just a few years ago. Which leaves us with a very important question. Have flagship phones genuinely become better, or have mid-range phones simply caught up? So we've decided to settle the debate in the only way that we know possible. We're turning into the World Cup of smartphones. So each of us has selected a head-to-head tie between a more affordable challenger and a premium heavyweight. We'll make our case, we'll compare the specs, compare the experience, and then decide which phone deserves to progress to the next round. By the end, we'll have three finalists, and then we'll decide which phone deserves to lift the trophy and be crowned our World Cup phone winner of 2026. So let's get the tournament underway. Jace, would you like to kick things off?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So basically, I've got like a Scotland phone versus a France phone. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the nothing phone for a pro. Versus the Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra. What do you think? Good match?
Yeah, all right. that's good. Good to start things off.
So I've gone for perhaps the biggest David versus Goliath battle in smartphones, or should that be, I don't know, John McGinn versus Mbappe.
Mbappe,
or whatever. I'll sort of go. Yeah. In one corner, the Nothing Phone 4A Pro. That's £499. In the other, Samsung's Galaxy S26 Ultra at a mere £1,279. Now, if you told me 10 years ago that I'd be, comparing a £500 phone with Samsung's absolute, A-team, I'd have laughed at you. But just look now, in 2026, what £499 buys you, right? The 4A Pro, so it's not their flagship phone, guys. That's the Nothing Phone 3. This is their mid-range phone, the Nothing Phone 4A Pro, which has a huge 6.8-inch AMOLED display, runs at 144Hz, so really good refresh rate, good for gaming, John. It's got a telephoto camera, also John.
John.
And a really good battery that lasts all day. You get 12 gigs of RAM and, frankly, way more technology than I ever envisaged, a phone of this price point would sport. And here's the thing. Unlike any other phone in that price point, my goodness, does it look great. It looks so good. Oh, man, it's fantastic, right? All metal body, I'm pretty sure it's aluminium. And it's got that glimpse matrix, 63 mini LEDs that act almost as a subsidiary screen, giving you really cool functionality. Like, I think it lights up when your car arrives, your Uber or whatever. It gives you things like where the sun is. It'll show you in this LED display. Little games, like you can shake it and there's a dice, like what are those things, the eight ball thing. There's a dice. I mean, it's so cool. If you're listening or watching and you've not seen this, trust me, it's beautiful. And then the layer that Nothing put over the Android operating system. Again, it's really clean. It's not bloated. They call it bloatware, don't they? And I have to say, I've had many Samsungs and I'm a huge fan of the ultra top-end Samsung phones. I've had many. But my goodness, they are guilty of having all kinds of different layers of apps that do the same thing. You get the Android apps, you get Samsung's version of them, you then get your Google ones and all. It's really complicated. It's a really simple phone that really rewards the user with style and ease of use, all right?
But punching, isn't it? It's definitely punching.
So for Samsung, where does the extra £800 go? Well, the Samsung starts answering that question pretty quickly. First of all, the display is mind-blowing. It's brighter than the Nothing phone. It's sharper, more colour accurate They've also introduced anti-reflective privacy coating, which a lot of people are wowed by. So you can be on the train and you can be looking at your stuff and you don't have to worry about someone snooping over your shoulder. There's the camera. You can't talk about those phones, the Ultra series, without talking about the camera. They're nothing as, you know, good cameras. The Samsung has insane cameras. So we're talking 200 megapixel main sensor, zoom capabilities, and all this sort of AI functionality that, you know, now gives, I think, really good upgrades to those of us, unlike John, that don't actually know what shutter speed is. It can enable anyone to do an incredible picture and really high quality video. The improved durability and all the little refinements, they don't sound exciting until you actually use the phone and you need to capture content and you need to do almost like office tasks on it with the pen in particular. It's very, very usable. More like a mini laptop, the S26 Ultra. For messaging, social media, streaming, navigation, banking, I don't know, shopping, photography, I wouldn't say that the Nothing phone feels 800 quid worse, but it is not as well performing in those particular areas and experiences as the S26 Ultra. If the Samsung is a 10 out of 10, I would say the Nothing is probably an 8.5. An 8.5. Isn't that incredible for 499 quid? So there you go. So that's my very brief summary of the functionality of these phones. All right, in this fantasy league of World Cup phones, I'm allowed to choose one team, you know, to go forward. The Samsung is obviously the better phone, all right? It's extraordinary. But if we're judging phones based on what you get for your money, which I think is the criteria for this World Cup of phones, yep, the Nothing phone 4A Pro is the bigger achievement, I think it's fair to say. All right, £499 gets you a phone that, you know, gets remarkably close to Samsung's £1,300 flagship. Plus, it has real panache. It has personality. It has charisma. It'll be a phone that stimulates conversations on a cafe table from complete strangers who you might end up, I don't know, marrying. So I think it's clear. Going through to the next round is the Nothing. No one was talking about them. They said they were rubbish. Their kit was sponsored by a kebab shop. But they've got through to the next round of the World Cup of Phones, the Nothing Phone 4A Pro.
Brilliant summary. Thank you very much. John, would you like to follow that? Not sure I can.
Well, I don't know that I can. But now my choice is between Apple's latest so-called budget phone, the 17E, and a price of £599, which is, it fits into this middle category we're talking about, this mid-market, and the flagship current offering from Google, the Pixel 10 Pro XL. So it's not simply actually a battle between a cheaper phone and a more expensive phone. It's also a battle between almost two completely different approaches to what a smartphone should be.
Nice.
I have to declare an interest. So Mrs. Bentley has an iPhone 17e, and so does my daughter's husband has an iPhone 17e. They both bought them. They're absolutely delighted with them. So they do what they want a phone to do, which they primarily want it to be an iPhone, but they don't want to bother with an expensive one and lots of extra cameras and so on. It's got a reasonable display. It's perfectly good. It's bright enough. I forget how many nits it is. You get it doesn't have 120 hertz refresh rate, which I personally, as because I don't game a lot, I actually never really worry about that. I know 120 hertz does feel slightly smoother, but it anything that I have with a 60 hertz rate doesn't annoy me at all. So that wouldn't be a big deal for me. It's got 256 gigabytes of storage. It's half the price of a Pro version of an iPhone. It's got all day battery life. You've got that 48 megapixel camera, which is it doesn't have the super wide, which actually it would be an annoyance for me. I find I use that quite a lot, and it has a sort of telephoto, instead it zooms in on the pixels on the 48 megapixel sensors. They call that a 2x optical quality zoom. All this is very good, so you do get all those Apple things for a reasonable price. But the problem is that in this particular comparison, it's standing next to the Pixel 10 Pro XL. And I often ask myself, you know, is the premium phone worth the extra money? And for most people, most of the time, it's probably not. But for me, most of the time, it usually is. Actually, because I take lots of pictures with it, and I do find the extra camera lenses and the optical zooms and the so on really do make a difference. And obviously, as soon as you turn the Pixel on, you notice it's got a better screen. That dynamically adjusts its refresh rate up to 120 hertz, depending on what you're doing. And some people really do notice that immediately. I think on day-to-day basis, if you unless you're doing photography, unless you're doing gaming, I don't think you really would tell the difference between the 17e and the Pixel in terms of speed, because actually the A19 processor is very good. I mean, Google's AI-powered features have an advantage, and you definitely have an advantage in the camera front with the 48 megapixel telephoto, the 48 megapixel ultra wide on top of that main camera. I mean, it's a tricky one. I mean, for me personally, I would probably choose an Apple Pro Max phone over the 17e, mainly for the camera. Although it does annoy me slightly that you're paying all this extra money for a camera that only lasts for as long as your phone. It always seems a bit wasteful in a way, because whereas if you buy a traditionally, if you bought a camera, you know, you're still using it a decade on, and it still feels great, whereas your phone is at the bottom of a drawer or sold on. For me, in this battle, if I was buying, if Mr. Bentley was buying a new phone, I would recommend she stayed with the 17e, not go with the Pixel. For me, I'd probably go with the Pixel for the extra photography, really.
You slightly blurred the lines there, John, with your argument, but I know... I hear you.
But I've got to pick the winner for me.
You did the penalty shootout against yourself, basically.
It's a shootout. I've been shooting myself for the last...
It'll be like tonight. I tell you what, because at the time of filming, sure, England are about to play, God knows, Croatia.
Croatia,
and
yeah.
This is how it's going to go, right? We're like, yeah, England, woo! And then like, after an hour, they're just passing the ball around. And then an hour and a half, they're still passing the ball around. That's what your review is. Like, it just gets to the point where it's not like some dazzling footwork and like headers and cool stuff and overhead kicks and that from Google. It's just kind of a win. And you kind of just wanted to get back to your life afterwards.
If it came down to me, I've got to just decide on the winner for me, which one of these two I would choose.
Yet.
And there was, I think, in spite of the fact we're in a sort of bit of an iPhone family, I would, for the photography alone, I would go for the Pixel 10 out of these two.
After extra time and penalties, okay,
God.
Excellent. Right, just for the record, Jason, I think we will win tonight. And I don't think we'll be doing passing at the back too much. I think we'll be just winning. Should I put my phones into the mix?
Yeah.
So I'm going for the OnePlus 15R versus the John's Apple iPhone 17 Pro Max that he's already mentioned, even though it's absolutely not his phone. I think my comparison is going to highlight one of the biggest dilemmas facing smartphone buyers this year. For years, we've been told that if you want the best phone, you need to spend flagship money. But when you look at what phones like the OnePlus 15R are offering, that argument is so much harder to make, I think. So the OnePlus 15R costs around £649. So we're all much of a muchness there with our mid-range phones. The iPhone 17 Pro Max costs almost exactly double that. So on paper...
God, that's mad.
I know, it sounds like a mismatch, doesn't it? Surely the one that's most expensive would win this, would walk this comfortably. But the reality...
Just like in football.
It's more complicated.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll start with the OnePlus. Now, what immediately stands out with this is how little compromise there appears to be. So the display is huge at just under 7 inches. It's AMOLED and it runs an astonishing 165 hertz refresh rate. Now, that's actually higher than the iPhone's refresh rate. So under the bonnet, there's a Snapdragon 8 Gen 5 processor and 12 gigs of RAM, giving it more than enough performance for gaming, Jace, multitasking, video editing, and pretty much anything else you'd realistically want to be able to do on a smartphone. Then there's the battery. And at 7,400 milliamp hours, it's absolutely massive. Most flagship phones struggle to get anywhere near that figure. Combined with 80-watt fast charging, it's the kind of a phone that almost removes battery anxiety from your life completely. You stop thinking about charging because it simply lasts so long. And what's remarkable is that all of this is available for hundreds of pounds less than a flagship.
Wow.
However, this is where Apple reminds us why the iPhone Pro Max range continues to dominate the premium market. The iPhone isn't necessarily about winning individual specs. In fact, there are several areas where the OnePlus has stronger numbers on paper. Instead, Apple's strength is and has always been in the overall experience. The hardware, software and services all working together in a way that's incredibly polished, the ecosystem. The display is superb. The A19 Pro processor is one of the most powerful mobile chips ever produced. The camera system remains, I think you'll agree with this, John, among one of the best available on any smartphone, particularly when it comes to video recording. So whether you're filming family moments, creating content for social media or shooting professional quality footage for movies, Jason, the iPhone remains the benchmark. The ecosystem, as I mentioned, is another major factor. If you own AirPods, Apple Watch, an iPad, MacBook, the experience of moving between the devices, as you'll know, is almost effortless. The OnePlus wins on value. There's no question about that. It offers flagship level performance, you know, exceptional battery that we talked about and a stunning display at nearly half the price of the iPhone. But every time I ask myself why somebody would spend the extra money on the iPhone, the answer becomes really clear. The cameras are better. The video capabilities are better. The ecosystem is better. The overall fit and finish is better. Most importantly, the entire experience feels incredibly refined. The OnePlus is the phone that makes me question whether flagship prices have become too high, and I personally think they have. The iPhone is the phone that reminds me why some people are still willing to pay them, if that makes sense. So while the OnePlus 15R is one of the best value smartphones that I've seen all year, and for many people, it will deliver absolutely everything they need, and then some. If we're looking for the strongest overall package rather than simply the best bargain, then my winner has to be the iPhone 17 Pro Max. It's more expensive, but it's one of the few premium smartphones that genuinely feels like a complete experience.
For me, it's also a very important point to make is at the level at which I access football, right? My favourite team is based on kit, and the iPhone 17 Pro is orange. It's like an 80s orange.
Orange. It's burnt orange.
Yeah.
Say no more.
I don't think people talk about enough about kit on the World Cup commentary.
They talk about full kit people, but that's something else.
I was far too busy trying to avoid football at school so I could go into the gym and practice breakdancing.
Okay, we could have done a breakdancing World Championship, but anyway, let's just summarise then.
Yeah.
Jace, your phone of choice is the Nothing Phone 4A Pro. Yeah. John, you've gone for the Pixel 10 Pro XL. And I have gone for Apple's iPhone 17 Pro Max. So, chaps, we need to pick a winner. Let's put it to a vote.
Yes.
And you can't choose your own.
Oh, come on. That's not right, is it? I'm the manager.
They have no power these days, managers, I'm afraid
Do
to tell
not?
You. No, not really.
Okay.
You vote, yeah.
Because it's orange and I want one but can't afford one, I'm going to go for the iPhone 17 Pro Max.
Shall I go next? Because you've gone for my phone.
Yes.
So I'll go next and I'm actually going to pick your choice, Jace.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the Nothing Phone 4A Pro. I honestly would have picked the iPhone, obviously, because that's what I put forward.
Phone.
But I like it because I think it really punches and I like the fact that they think out of the box and differently and you can see it's a different kind of phone. So I choose it for that reason.
Great.
And John, you have the...
deciding vote, mate.
Well,
no.
Deciding, unless you can't go for your own, so...
Can't go for it. I'm going for the one I would actually buy out of this lot, which is the 17 Pro Max.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with that, because that is genuinely what would happen if I was in the shop tomorrow.
So that's interesting. After all of that, we've ended up with the Apple
again or whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean,
well,
or France.
I suppose just. Yes. Oh, sorry. Yes, you were saying it's all in tea. I don't understand the nuances enough.
And Jason has predicted the winner of the World Cup. So let's see if that comes true. Let's see if France win. That's all we've got time for on this week's Gadget Show podcast.
Huge thank you to Johnny Boy for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
And showing us his collection of files. I love that. Yes. And of course, a massive thank you.
I'm like, this camera, you can't move it around. The state of this room is terrible. Anyway,
well, thank you to all of you for listening and watching and coming along for the ride. I feel like all these analogies are like coming along for the ride. We should now be doing football ones. So thank you for turning up in the stands on such a freezing day.
Well done. Before we go, I'd like to say a special thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see their names on the screen right now.
Yep, they're the people that have been helping us progress through the early stages of this competition and create more content and keep this whole gadget-loving adventure moving forward until eventually we get promoted.
Yeah, so if you've been supporting us, it's good. You're keeping us in the league.
And if you'd like to become part of our supporters club, you get, by the way, at the top tier, you get a segment of orange and Susie with a magic sponge.
Oh, your magic sponge.
What I meant to say was you'll get some nice perks in return.
Including ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, bonus content, access to nearly 20 years of Gadget Show archive material and entry into our £5,000 CEX Tech Shopping Spree giveaway. And from me, a piece of orange and my magic sponge.
Ah, lovely. And if you're... if your muscles are aching, Susie will spray you down with some Ralgex.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, nice. You'll be helping us make even more Gadget Show content in the future.
Is this a good time to tell you that? I used to wash the strips from my dad's football team. Anyway, you can find all the details. It stunk. It was so bad. On patreon.com/thegadgetshow.
Yeah. None of that stuff involving Susie, by the way, is going to happen if you follow us on Patreon. Right then, we'll be back next week with more gadgets and more tech news.
Thanks, John. See you next week.
Thanks, John. Yes.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.